Welcome in, everybody, to a Friday edition of the Call in a Podcast, recording August 14th, bottom of the 2 o'clock hour. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're powered by CLNS Media. I want to get right into it. We've got a great guest for you today. The Celtics playoffs begin on Monday. So we called, who else, the Celtics guru, Dan Greenberg, from Barstool Sports. You know him as Stool Greeny. And we're going to break down this Celtics series with him. Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
Awesome. What's going on, guys?
Just getting ready. You know, especially after the way the Bruins looked last night, getting ready to lean on the Celtics here in the playoffs coming up. And I want to start kind of big picture. Put yourself back in the mindset you were before these eight seeding games were played, right? Going into the bubble, if I told you at that point the Celtics would draw the Sixers in the first round, how would you feel they did?
I would feel that they probably played well enough to stay in their seed, and the Sixers did the same. I mean, I don't fear any opponent in the East if the Celtics play to their potential. So if you were to tell me the Sixers were going to be who it was, even with Ben Simmons, I would be just as confident as I am going up against the Sixers team without Ben Simmons.
Okay. And you mentioned Ben Simmons there. Obviously, he's out for the season, getting that surgery on his knee. How does that change things for the Celtics in regard to how they're going to prepare for this series? What do you expect to see differently from the 76ers this time around?
Yeah, so it's almost a completely different approach and a completely different team that you could argue actually helps, you know, based on how the Celtics are built, right? Like, a lot of their issues in their head-to-head matchups were Simmons being able to, you know, shut down Kemba, guard one of the two elite wings at an elite level, and that sort of messed everything up, right? They used their size with Simmons and Embiid to their advantage. They attacked Kemba, they put him in the paint, things like that. Now, you have a little bit of a different situation where, you know, they're much more of a traditionally built team where they're going to play through Embiid in the post, but then surround him with shooters. And I think that helps the Celtics because the Celtics do have good perimeter defenders. I think, you know, if it comes into a shooting contest, you have to like how they stack up given how they've looked. So I actually think, you know, the Simmons injury makes the Sixers hard to guard in theory, but I think it helps line up with how the Celtics are built a lot better than if they had a 6'10 point guard.
So, quick side tangent here, because I read your preview of the series, which is now up on BarstoolSports.com, and I am a longtime card-carrying member of the Ben Simmons is Overrated Club. I might be the president. Have I kind of been, you know, proven right what we've seen with the Sixers these last couple games?
No, I don't think so. I mean, just because they're different doesn't necessarily mean they're better. I mean, they're going to look, their offense is right around, you know, the same as it was pre and post Simmons. They're just different. So now they're much more of a threat as a shooting team, but their defense is a big time issue, especially on the perimeter, right? Like now they're going to be forced to play Horford and Embiid together. Well, if the Celtics are going to spread them out, you know, not having that guy like Simmons to stop penetration is going to be a big deal with how this series lines up on the defensive side. So offensively, like, they're not as good in transition. You know, yeah, they have more shooters, which Simmons doesn't do, and the Celtics aren't going to be able to just, you know, play off him by 10 feet or whatever. But, no, they're not a better team without Ben Simmons. I think that's maybe taking a little too far.
So you mentioned Al Horford, and he's going to get, like you said, he's going to starting lineup. He's going to see the floor quite a bit more now in this series. Are you at all worried about, or how much do you factor in the familiarity factor and the emotional impact that that's going to bring to the series?
I think, yeah, I don't know. I think that stuff matters to some degree, but like from a familiarity standpoint, like, you know, everybody's going to know what, you know, you're playing a team within your division. You know what they want to do on both sides of the ball, whether or not Horford is there or not, right? Like, it's not like he's giving them any sort of secret for a playoff series. But, you know, what I am concerned about is, you know, how he and Embiid are able to protect the rim, right? So once that first line of defense goes to the wayside and Tatum or Kemba or Jaylen are getting into the paint, you know, it is going to be interesting to see how they're able to finish efficiently at the rim with a Horford and Embiid right there. So that's why I'm interested to see how they approach it offensively. You know, do you just spread everybody out kind of like what Houston does and just attack and make them take one of the bigs off the floor? But I mean, there's no denying that he's going to be a problem on the glass. You know, he's going to be a problem defensively if you try to, you know, take him in the post. I mean, all the things that we loved about Al Horford still exist. It'll just be interesting to see how the Celtics are able to counter that, you know, now that they don't have this 6'10", you know, defensive wizard flying in off the weak side to maybe help if Horford has trouble.
And you mentioned that that's kind of one of the Celtics' weaknesses, really, this season. One guy who has helped on that front lately is Rob Williams. Do you expect Brad Stevens to be playing him more often? Is his role going to continue to increase even through the postseason?
So at least in this matchup, I still think you're going to get a lot of Tyson Cantor, just because, you know, Cantor's defensive metrics against Embiid are actually pretty good, you know, throughout their career, you know, matchups, not just this year, but, you know, in previous years when he was on, you know, Portland and the Knicks and all that stuff. So Cantor's still going to be your first big off the bench, I feel like. But I think Rob has played his way into the rotation. I think he's taking Grant's spot, and there's just, like, if he can stay healthy, he is what they need in terms of a rim-running center. He doesn't rebound that well, and that's an issue. But just in terms of rim protection and just having another, you know, 6'10", 6'11 body to throw at Embiid, I would be surprised if he didn't play. But for me, Cantor and Tice are going to be your two main guys.
Speaking of the rotations, when it comes to Gordon Hayward, if you put yourself in Brad's shoes for a second, all right, he's going to leave at some point. It's expected. I think it's September, right, for the birth of his child. If you're Brad Stevens, do you play him more and lean on him more early because you don't necessarily have to have him fresh down the road, right? You can tire him out a little earlier. Or do you play him less so the rest of the team gets used to playing without him and that chemistry on the floor is built up without him there?
No, I just think you keep it your normal rotation, right? Like, okay. We're in no position to assume that they can, you know, give him a lighter workload and be okay. But also, like, once he leaves, he's potentially only going to be gone for 4 days. So, like, I don't want to burn him out in this series. But he is an X factor. I mean, he has struggled against the Sixers. So that's why I'm more focused on just, like, what's the health of Romeo Langford's wrist? How many minutes could he potentially get? Just because when you think of how Brad does his rotations, he's probably only going to go, you know, 6 or 7 deep. But, you know, I don't know if it makes more sense to insert Marcus into the starting lineup when Hayward is out, as opposed to someone like Langford, where you say, listen, just play defense. Don't worry about anything else. And if you score, have it be on a backdoor cut or something. But I don't think they're going to, if it were me, I wouldn't treat his minutes, his usage, any different from what we've seen through the 8 receiving games. Just because he's looked so good, why would you want to mess with it?
So you look at a team like the 76ers, a lot of personalities on that team, a lot of young guys. And then you have the head coach, obviously, and Brett Brown. It seems like the relationship between him and his players has kind of run stale. Is this the last season we'll see with Brett Brown as the head coach of the Sixers, or is there any way that he can salvage that job?
No, I mean, I just don't think you can fire him if he just lost his second, you know, arguably one of his top two best players in the playoffs. Like, how do you, like, yeah, they have talent and they should, you know, have a competitive series. But, I mean, I think it just depends on how the series goes. If it's like 2 years ago where, you know, 4 of the 5 games are a possession or two away from going the other way, I bet you they would hold on to him. If every game is a 20-point blowout and it really looks like he's lost control of his roster, then they probably make a change and maybe bring in someone like Kenny Atkinson. I don't even know who's out there, but I think if it's a competitive series and the Sixers just end up losing, I think he gets one more year just because, I mean, not having Simmons is a pretty big deal.
I want to ask you about some of the other series too. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the playoffs as a whole. And I got to start with a team that's ultimately not going to be in the playoffs, unfortunately. Did the rest of the league kind of get lucky that the Suns got eliminated as hot as they were?
Yeah, I mean, even though it would have been, you know, you can't assume that they would win 10 games in a row and actually make the playoffs. you know, because they would have had to win both games against Portland in the play-in as well. But it just goes to show, like, you know, they could have played better during the rest of the season. You know, Ayton got suspended 25 games. There's your difference maker right there. So it sucks that they're not there. I think they surprised everybody with how they played, and I think they've earned a new level of respect. But just because you go 8-0, like, you didn't control your own destiny, and because another team ahead of you won, like, that's just life. That's tough. You should have been better during the regular season. But they were fun as hell to watch, that's for sure.
Who's one team, and I know you said before, as the Celtics, you don't fear playing anybody, but take the Celtics out of it for a second. If you're a fan of any team in the playoffs, who is the one team you do not want to see in this tournament?
From both conferences, or just like out of everybody?
From both conferences. If everybody left besides the Celtics, who is the one team you do not want to see?
Oh, man, I don't know. Maybe the Clippers, just because they're deep, I think. You know, and I just think, you know, Kawhi goes to a different level. If him and George are healthy, they match up just as well with your two wings, which are the lifeblood of your team. They have the depth that you don't have. They have guys that can, you know, match Kemba's production. So I'd probably just say the Clippers, just because of their overall depth. They, you know, the Lakers have the top-end talent. The Bucks have the top-end talent, but the Clippers are just so complete. And when they really turn it on, I think they were like 11-1 or something crazy when everyone was healthy before the break. So probably them.
And last one before we let you go here, or last one, then we'll get your prediction for the finals and we'll let you go. I've had a ton of fun watching Damian Lillard. I think more than any player in this tournament, he has just absolutely gone off. He's really arrived from a smaller market in Portland. It's been great to see. How far do you think he can carry that team in this tournament?
So if they win the play-in, I think they can take, like, the Lakers to six games. I just think the Blazers just don't play enough defense to warrant any sort of deep postseason run. And I just think, you know, who's going to stop LeBron on that team? They don't have, you know, is Melo going to have to be defending LeBron? I don't love that matchup. So I think, you know, even though Dame beat them in the regular season in February pretty much by himself, I think he had like 50 on the night that they, you know, paid tribute to Kobe. I just think once you get into playoffs, once defenses tighten up, you know, they have a lot of young guys who have never really been in this position before. I just, you know, defense matters in the postseason series. And as we saw last night, they play like negative amount of defense. So, but I do think they can take it to like, you know, five or six games in that series.
Okay. So what is then, what is your finals prediction? Who versus who comes out on top?
I mean, listen, on other radio shows, I have made the declaration, so I'm going to stick to it. I have Celtics over Clippers in seven.
Okay. I mean, that would be, and you just kind of broke it down there for us briefly, but I think that would be, in terms of entertainment value and compete factor, the best series we could get out of this tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, you know, Doc left the Celtics because he didn't want to rebuild. They brought in Brad. I think it would be a pretty cool story if, you know, those two men in the finals, and it's like the team that he didn't want to rebuild beat the team that he went to. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Absolutely. He is Dan Greenberg from Barstool Sports at Stool Greeny. His preview, understanding what version of the process the Celtics will actually be facing. Love that title, by the way. That's up on barstoolsports.com right now. Celtics and Sixers get underway Monday night. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, awesome. Anytime, guys.
So there you have it. Dan Greenberg, Barstool Sports, Celtics, Sixers. They get underway on Monday. We'll have a show early next week with the early recap of that series. You just know, like, rivalry series like that level, it's going to go six, seven games. I mean, that one's not going to be over quickly.
Oh, yeah. And there's also this connection between the Celtics and the Sixers in which their rebuild has kind of coincided. And you obviously had the Markelle Fultz, Jason Tatum draft, which we all know which side got that one right. So it's an interesting rivalry. Of course, Al Horford. I'm looking forward to it. I personally don't think it's going to be all that competitive of the series. But, you know, the rivalry between those two teams, both in the past decade and historically speaking, it's always makes for an entertaining matchup. So it's going to be fun to watch. I'm ready for it.
It is. Unlike the Bruins game last night, that was torture. And yes, we got to talk about Tuukka Rask's comments. Now, me and you have both been pretty open anti-Kyrie, anti-David Price for comments about not caring. And I won't lie, I heard Tuca's comments at first last night, and I kind of just shrugged them off. But you know what it comes down to for me? I understand that it's a different environment. I get that. I get how that can be a challenge. I'll give him that. But every other team's dealing with that too. So the fact that just you guys, the Bruins, can't figure that out, and the other, whatever it is, 22, 24 teams that are there somehow have, you had three games to work on it. It shouldn't be new anymore. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? If he says that after the first game of the round robin, fine. Whatever. It, like, I get that. I get that. I do. Because I think it is really weird for these guys. But, dude, second game in the playoffs, be ready. Be ready already.
Yeah. And it's important to note, like, he was out for the first game or two. So he had a little bit of a late start getting into action again. And he was speaking honestly. You got to commend him for that to some extent.
Nah.
But you're in the playoffs. No?
No, because it's a distraction now. Every player's being asked about it. It's hanging over the team. Like, you're a veteran leader of this team. Don't just drop that chum in the water for the media to run with, right? There's been talk since they got to Toronto about them not being prepared. They've been trying to downplay that, and now he comes out and says this? No, that's the last thing. I don't care if he's being honest. And look, we call for athletes to kind of man up and be honest all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't want to come across like a hypocrite. There are certain times when you just say, wasn't our night. And last night was one of those times. Again, if he said it after the first game, if he said it during the round robin series, I don't think I would have the same reaction. But no, it's too late to be saying that it's weird, because you've been in that environment now. It shouldn't be that weird anymore.
Okay, I'll grant you this. He shouldn't have said it, but he is, I mean, there's no way to deny that that's the truth. When you have nobody in the venue,
well, that's not players. It's not good if that's the truth. It's embarrassing for him if that's the truth.
But I don't think it's simply the truth for Tuukka Rask or the Bruins. I think this is something that every team is trying to cope with, trying to fight against. And then you had Brad Marchand come out and you know, dispute those comments. He's like, no, this is the playoffs. We're playing playoff hockey, and that's the mindset we have. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But it's not good. I do wonder, will Bruce Cassidy go with Halak instead? In response to those comments, because if you have a goaltender who's outwardly saying, I'm not feeling like this is a playoff atmosphere, how is the head coach gonna respond to that? You know, despite what the circumstances are, maybe there is something that goes on there, you know, with roster management and you know, going with a different direction. But yeah, you don't want to hear it. You definitely don't want to hear it, but I think a lot of guys in the NHL are feeling that way right now. Should he have said it on game one or game two instead? Yeah, probably. He shouldn't have said it last night, but that's what we're dealing with. I think that every single athlete that's playing in a bubble, whether it's the NBA or the NHL, is, again, trying to cope with this issue of having no energy from fans to feed off of. You're just out there and you're playing. And how many of these guys can get themselves going enough to you know, compensate for that problem? I don't think it's all that many at the end of the day.
So I would actually, in terms of the goalies, I would look at it the other way around. I thought because of the back-to-back, right, after the 5-overtime game, that it's just too many games in too few days. Halak was going to have to play at some point. You cannot pull Tuukka Rask for game three after those comments. Tuukka has to have a good game before you put Halak in. This is just the reality of it. And this could snowball. He could not have a good game because it's going to look like the team's losing all faith in Rask. You can't pull him now after he said that. That's just not a good look. And in reference to something else that you said, I'm more worried about Tuukka specifically than the Bruins. Look, they didn't have their best player last night, right? David Pastrnak was out. We'll see if he plays Saturday, I believe is their next game. I'm more worried about that than what Tuukka said. But like I just alluded to, my biggest worry is now, if you don't play Tuukka in game three, and he's going to need rest at some point, if you don't play him in game three, or if he struggles in game three and then you don't play him in game four, what message does that send to the team? It's not a good one. Even if he does ultimately need that day off, it doesn't send a good message. So I think Tuukka's kind of, he should not have said that. I don't care how true it is. He should not, you know, and to go back to what we were talking about before, because I don't think Tuca's quite on David Price's level, but there are times where what David Price was saying wasn't necessarily wrong. It was just the wrong time and place to say it. And I think that's what we have with Tuca right now.
Sure. I don't think it's a fair comparison, because David Price is just, I find him to be more of a ridiculous individual. He would fight with the media. He just seemed like he would take extremely long. I mean, it's apples and oranges, but David Price was not a guy that I thought was a great leader or great influence in the clubhouse. I don't think Tuukka Rask has that problem. He's proven himself in the postseason before. He's proven himself on this team. Obviously, he's been here he's been in Boston for a very long time. But yeah, I could kind of see some parallels there. I do wonder, again, how are his teammates taking it? I think Brad Marchand, and maybe that's the difference between the Bruins and the Red Sox. The Red Sox would embrace David Price in that sort of mindset. And maybe the Bruins, again, as Marchand said, are kind of going against that messaging and that, you know, that thought process that Tuca has, in which he's saying, yeah, it's not, just doesn't feel the same. Like, so maybe they do bounce back. Maybe this is a rallying cry. Maybe this is something that will wake up Tuukka Rask and the Bees. But it's got to rub his teammates the wrong way. I think you're spot on there. And we'll see. Will Halak be in that game three? Maybe not. Probably not. I think you laid out good reasons why, you know, Cassidy shouldn't do that. But I wouldn't be surprised. And if that is the case, I don't think it's solely due to rest. Those comments, again, honest. I think it's the truth when if we're breaking it down. But you shouldn't say it. You shouldn't say it. And he did. We'll see if they bounce back from it. I think a lot of it does stem on whether or not David Pastrnak is back in that lineup. He's their best player. They kind of need him. They almost squeaked one out last night without him.
I think they win last night if they have him. I mean, like, I think that was more so the difference than Tuukka Rask not being able to look up and see a blonde in the third row.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that's probably a bigger impact than no fans. You're probably right. The best goal scorer in hockey should be out there.
So we'll see. And look, maybe Tuukka bounces back and is like awesome in game three. Like, I'm not ruling that out either. That's the Tuukka Rask experience. Like, he could come back and the Bruins could win three straight and Rask allows like one goal in the three games. And that could absolutely happen too. I'm not ruling that out. So we'll see. We do got to touch on the Red Sox.
And he also hasn't, just one more, he hasn't played that horribly. Like, he's made a few good saves last night. He made a few good saves, obviously, in game one. Is he standing on his head? But no, but still, he's playing. He's still a great goaltender, and he's a veteran. He could bounce back for sure.
Got to touch on the Red Sox real quick. They gave up 18 runs Thursday night. I think I've gone on my Kumar Rocker spiel on this show, but again, everybody Google him. And I'm just, you know, people were mad at the Red Sox not doing enough this offseason. I have to give them credit here. They realized this season was going to be a loss. They didn't in any way, shape, or form sacrifice. I mean, after they traded Mookie, of course. Once that went down, I think there was a recognition that we're punting on the season. And some people say, why don't they sign more starting pitching and this and that? Like, why don't they call prospects up? I am totally fine with them punting on the season. I'm just glad they see that.
Yeah, I think you have a guy in Chaim Bloom who's now the president. And unlike Dave Dombrowski, he can evaluate talent. Obviously, the higher the draft pick, the more value there is there. The more likely you are to hit on somebody, as you've alluded to. I mean, I'm fine with it. I just find the product that they put out there completely unwatchable. They have no pitching whatsoever. And I'm frustrated because I think they could have kind of had a gap year while still putting out, you know, starting pitchers, something that's pretty important to the game of baseball. But instead, they've gone a completely separate direction. I just don't like accepting that. But there is this other storyline in which you have a new president of baseball operations. He hasn't really settled in yet. When you have those draft picks, it will be interesting to see how they will be utilized and you know, whether or not Chaim Bloom will live up to the hype. I think that's the one silver lining with this Red Sox season.
I'm just looking for the real silver lining is going to be the trade deadline. That's what I'm looking forward to see what kind of prospects they get. You'll get the Yankees. They kind of recognized they were going to have a gap year a couple years ago. They cleaned up huge at the deadline. You look at what they are now. Like, that's kind of how I see the Red Sox projecting in the next 5 years or so. We'll have plenty of shows, though, before then to talk about it. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Check us out online as well at clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next time.